Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'll be reading the week's local articles from the San Angelo Standard Times. These are for the week of Sunday, February 7th, 2021. I'll begin with the most recent articles. This week, I am reading these on Wednesday as I will be off work on Thursday and Friday. First, COVID-19 update, a look at San Angelo coronavirus data for February. As of February 9th, City of San Angelo, 16,032 positive cases reported, 38 new positive cases, deaths 289. 187 from Tom Green County and 102 from other counties. 33 currently hospitalized. 934 active cases. The first series of stories this week relates to the water situation in San Angelo. San Angelo officials give update on water advisory by Nate Chute, published February 9th. The City of San Angelo held a press conference Tuesday afternoon regarding a water advisory by the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality that has forced schools and businesses in the area to close. Officials have said residents reported the water smelled like naphthalene, although statements released by TCEQ were amended Tuesday afternoon to describe the smell of water as a chemical odor like mothballs. Water samples have been collected, but it could take 24 to 48 hours to see results. Can I use my water? These areas of San Angelo have been released from the water advisory, published February 10th, from staff reports. The City of San Angelo has released some areas from the Do Not Use water advisory. Large swaths of San Angelo are being released gradually from the advisory along pressure plains separated by elevation. What does the city mean by upper and lower plain? The City of San Angelo operates two pressure plains due to the difference of elevation throughout the city. Each pressure plane serves portions of the distribution center that are hydraulically separated from other pump stations or pressure plains. The hydraulic separation was in existence and in operation prior to the Do Not Use order, which has allowed the city and TCEQ to determine that the apparent contamination has been limited to a portion of the lower pressure plane. Because the apparent contamination appears to be limited to a portion of the lower plane, the TCEQ and city have determined that the water in the upper pressure plane is safe to begin using again, and that portion of the city is released from the Do Not Use order. As of 7 a.m. Wednesday, the contaminant in the water is unknown. The city is continuing to work with the TCEQ to lift restrictions on more areas of the city, but the timeliness of that is dependent upon the lab results and TCEQ. The test results are expected sometime Wednesday, February 9th. The city and TCEQ identified and approved more areas to be released from the Do Not Use water restrictions. Officials said they will continue to update the public as more information becomes available. As of 11:30 p.m. Tuesday, areas released from the Do Not Use order were as follows. West of Howard Street from Glenna Street to Junius Street. South of Junius Street from Howard Street to Van Buren Street. West of North Van Buren Street from Junius Street to Webster Street. South of Webster Street from Junius Street to North Harrison Street. West of Harrison Street from Webster Street to Houston Hart Frontage Road. West of Westland Avenue from Houston Hart Frontage Road to Sherwood Way. West of North Fillmore Street and South Fillmore Street from Sherwood Way to Avenue J. South of West Avenue J from South Fillmore Street to South Coingheim Street. East of South Coingheim Street from West Avenue J to West Avenue I. South of West Avenue I and East Avenue I from South Coingheim Street to South Concho River. south of South Concho River and Concho River from East Avenue I to the city limits at Loop 306 Frontage Road, west of Howard Street from Glenna Street to Junia Street, south of Junia Street from Howard Street to North Van Buren Street, west of North Van Buren Street from Junia Street to Webster Street, south of Webster Street from Junius to North Harrison Street, west of North Van Buren Street to Junius Street to Webster Street, south of Webster Street from Junius to North Harrison Street, west of Harrison Street from Webster Street to Houston Hart Frontage Road, west of Westland Avenue from Houston Hart Frontage Road to Sherwood Way, west of North Fillmore Street from Sherwood Way to Vanderventer Avenue and Dena Drive, west of Phil George Drive from Dena Street to University Avenue, north of University Avenue from Phil George Drive to South Johnson Street, east of South Johnson Street from University Avenue to Oxford Avenue, north of Oxford Avenue from South Johnson Street to Sherwood Way, north of Sherwood Way from Oxford Avenue to Westwood Drive, east of Westwood Drive from Sherwood Way to Robin Hood Trail, north of Robin Hood Trail from Westwood Drive to Southwest Boulevard, west of Southwest Boulevard from Robin Hood Trail Extension Imaginary Line to Sherwood Way, north of Sherwood Way from Southwest Boulevard to FM 2288 Southland Boulevard, west of Southland Boulevard from Sherwood Way to Green Meadow Drive, south of Green Meadow Drive from Southland Boulevard to Oak Grove Boulevard, east of Oak Grove Boulevard from Green Meadow Drive to West Loop 306, south of West Loop 306 from Rudd Arroyo, west of Oak Grove Boulevard to South College Hills Boulevard, west of South College Hills Boulevard from West Loop 306 to Canyon Creek Drive, south of Canyon Creek Drive from South College Hills Boulevard to Fall Creek Drive, east of Fall Creek Drive from Canyon Creek Drive to West Loop 306, south of West Loop 306 from Fall Creek Drive to Buckskin Drive, separation from Bentwood area to properties to the east, including Butler Farm, west of Buckskin Drive, an imaginary line to Country Club Road, north of Country Club Road to Fish Hatchery Road, south and west of Country Club Road from Fish Hatchery along city limits. Wholesale customers that are also released from the Do Not Use order: Concho Rural Water, Grape Creek, Twin Buttes Water System, Turquoise Water, Concho Rural Water, Pecan Creek, Goodfellow Air Force Base, Miller's View Dual Water System. The city is working with TCEQ and continuing to sample the apparent contamination area to determine the feasibility of releasing portions of the lower pressure plane from the current Do Not Use order. Those efforts are ongoing. Additional information will be following as it becomes available. Emergency declaration issued for San Angelo due to water advisory by John Tufts, published February 9th. The city of San Angelo issued an emergency declaration on Tuesday in response to an advisory urging residents to not use water citywide. On Tuesday, February 9th, officials with the city released the following statement. The city of San Angelo is issuing an emergency disaster declaration and activating the city and county emergency operations plan, which allows us to request funding and assistance from the state of Texas if needed. In doing this, the city can request needed resources such as a financial disaster expert from the state for future emergencies, bottled water for distribution. We have issued disaster declarations in the past for the Bradford tornado, other water main breaks, and also for COVID-19. Free Water, San Angelo to Hand Out Bottles of Water at Coliseum, by John Tufts, published February 9th. This story will be updated with more information as it becomes available. Semi-trucks hauling pallets of water bottles are on the way to the Concho Valley to ease San Angelo's current water crisis after an advisory from the city urged residents to not use water citywide. During a media briefing Tuesday, City Manager Daniel Valenzuela said residents will be able to get free bottles of water. Distribution of water to the public began at 8 a.m. Wednesday, February 10th at Foster Communications Coliseum at 50 East 43rd Street. The site will operate until water runs out or people stop coming. About 1 p.m., the city announced HEB committed 13 additional truckloads of water for the community. Based on the generosity of various businesses, we are able to distribute more water to the public. We will now be able to give out a maximum of 2 cases per car, the city stated. As more supply trucks arrive, we will be able to offer more water to the public, the city stated. The city does expect to have more trucks coming to San Angelo with water. This is the second event to distribute water. The first was Tuesday evening at the Coliseum. Our priority is to make sure there is fresh drinking water for the citizens of San Angelo, said Emergency Management Coordinator Jim Evans with the City of San Angelo and Tom Green County. The City of San Angelo issued an emergency declaration on Tuesday in response to an advisory urging residents not to use water citywide. Schools, restaurants, and businesses one by one closed their doors after the City of San Angelo issued an advisory Monday evening asking residents not to use water citywide due to a mysterious odor coming out of dozens of faucets. Evans said he received a phone call from City Manager Daniel Valenzuela at about 5:30 p.m. Monday about the water advisory. He and his team began making phone calls immediately. We started to try to locate water bottle donations for the citizens of San Angelo, Evans said, and stated semi-trucks from Walmart, the local food bank, and HEB were donating bottles of water. We have trucks that should arrive Tuesday afternoon, Evans said, and stated water could be distributed as early as Tuesday night or early Wednesday morning. Evans said city officials were still working out logistics concerning how many bottles of water San Angelo residents would be allowed to have and stated more information would be provided later. San Angelo closures tied to do not use water advisory. From staff reports, published February 9th. As the issue with San Angelo water continues Wednesday, February 10th, here is a look at the closures and public entities impacted. San Angelo closures due to water advisory. Angelo State University. Due to continued water quality issues, all Angelo State University classes, both online and face-to-face, are canceled Wednesday. Dual credit classes are not affected. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner will remain available for students through Chartwell's. Arrangements are in place for students in residence halls still affected by the Do Not Use Water Notice to use other facilities on campus to maintain hygiene. The Office of Housing and Residential Programs will send specific communication directly to these students. Staff should check with their direct supervisors as to whether or not they are needed on campus tomorrow. San Angelo ISD. Following continued communication with the City of San Angelo, officials including the Water Utilities Director and Health Inspector, San Angelo ISD campuses will be closed to students tomorrow, February 10th. Due to the current City of San Angelo citywide Do Not Use Water Advisory, continuing to impact the majority of SAISD campuses, students will connect virtually. Additional details will be provided on the SAISD website, Facebook, Twitter shortly. Continue to monitor our website, social media, or other local media channels for further related updates. The safety of our students, staff, and families is our top priority. San Angelo ISD will remain in communication with the City of San Angelo officials and monitor the situation and developments closely. We appreciate the understanding, cooperation, and adaptability of our students, staff, families, and community. Goodfellow Air Force Base. Due to the continued City of Water advisory, the 17th Training Wing Commander is canceling all base activities at Goodfellow for February 10th. Mission essential personnel are to report as normal. Howard College. Due to the continued City of San Angelo Do Not Use Water status, Howard College, San Angelo, and St. John's campuses will be virtual Wednesday, February 10th. All classes will be held virtually online. Students should check their HC email and Blackboard for specific instructions from their instructors. Employees will work virtually and should check with supervisors for further information. TLCA. All campuses will return to in-person or virtual learning on Wednesday. The elementary and high school campuses are in the High Plain area where water is safe to use. The junior high is in the Do Not Use area, but classes will continue. The school will not have fountains or sinks in the bathroom, but will have bottled water, water bottles, wipes, and hand sanitizing stations. Trinity Lutheran. It appears that Trinity Lutheran School and ECC is still in the area that has not yet been cleared by the City of San Angelo to use city water. So for the safety of our students and staff, we will have to remain closed tomorrow, February 10th. San Angelo's advisory to stop using water may be tied to naphthalene. Here's what that is. By Diane Pantaleo, published February 9th. On Monday, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality issued an advisory instructing San Angelo residents not to use water citywide, and officials have said residents reported the water smelled like naphthalene. Officials sent samples of the water to a laboratory for testing Monday, but it may take 24 to 48 hours to see results. On Tuesday, statements released by TCEQ were amended to describe the smell of the water as a chemical odor like mothballs. At this time, the water sample results have not been returned or made public. The news of the advisory led to schools and business closures across the area. San Angelo ISD and other educational institutions announced that they would be closed Tuesday, and signs outside IHOP, Denny's, and Whataburger informed customers they were closed until further notice. Here's a look at the uses and effects of exposure of naphthalene and what that means going forward as San Angelo addresses the situation. What is naphthalene and what is it used for? Naphthalene is a hydrocarbon with a strong mothball odor, according to the National Library of Medicine. It can be obtained from either coal tar or petroleum distillation. It is primarily used in plastic manufacturing, and it is also used to make resins, fuels, and dyes. It is also used in moth repellents and as a fumigate insecticide. According to the National Pesticide Information Center, most products that contain naphthalene are used to control clothes moths in airtight containers. What are the health risks of naphthalene? The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services lists naphthalene as reasonably anticipated to be a human carcinogen, citing a study that found the compound causes cancer in lab rats. In particular, it may be associated with a higher risk of colorectal and laryngeal cancers. Inhaling naphthalene could cause nausea, dizziness, and vomiting. In some cases, exposure to large amounts can cause anemia. Ingesting naphthalene could cause kidney damage. What happens next? At this time, residents are advised not to use water until the source of the odor residents have reported is identified. This means that residents should not use the water for drinking and bathing. Residents can still use the water to flush toilets and for landscaping. The city has also clarified that restaurants cannot remain open under the advisory. The City of San Angelo will continue to provide updates as more information becomes available. It will be posted to their social media accounts as well as on tceq.texas.gov. What should you do if you have more questions? San Angelo Public Safety Communications has been inundated with calls from residents about the recent citywide water advisory in place. The City of San Angelo would like to remind everyone that non-emergency calls to inquire about water and power utilities or road conditions are problematic because they tie up lines that are meant for our residents who need to call about an immediate danger to themselves or someone else. For the most up-to-date information on the current water advisory, visit the City of San Angelo's Facebook page, facebook.com/City of San Angelo, Texas, or website COSATX.US/news. If you have questions concerning the test results of the sampled water, you should contact the Water Quality Lab at 325-481-2722. This story will be updated when more information is available. North San Angelo shooting ends with injured man, person of interest in custody, by Elena Edgen and Colin Murphy, published February 9th. One suspect is in custody after police responded to a shooting in North San Angelo on Tuesday afternoon, according to police scanner traffic. About 2:35 p.m. Tuesday, February 9th, first responders were dispatched to a shooting at the Cheyenne Crossing Apartments, 17 West 31st Street. A man who suffered gunshot wounds was on the ground, according to scanner traffic. We did locate a male victim, and he has been transported to Shannon Medical Center for treatment, said Tracy Piet Fox, SAPD Public Information Officer. The extent of his injuries are unknown. The scanner reported a suspect wearing red fled on foot heading north on Grape Creek. A suspect was in custody around 2:43 p.m., according to scanner traffic. Piet Fox confirmed a person of interest has been detained. The investigation is ongoing. Traffic on West 31st will be closed from North Chadburn to Grape Creek Road for several hours as of 4:30 p.m. SAPD says four men arrested after women threatened and assaulted in San Angelo, by Elena Edgen, published February 9th. Four people have been arrested after police investigated an assault over a theft in San Angelo, according to a police news release. Minutes after 9 p.m., Monday, February 8th, police responded to a residence in the unit block of East 22nd Street to an unknown problem, the release stated. A preliminary investigation revealed four people went to the residence with firearms and guns to confront the occupants about a recent theft of property. The confrontation led to the assault of a 21-year-old woman and an 18-year-old woman threatened by knife point, according to the release. Gabrielle Nicole Greenwood, 20, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and a parole violation warrant. She remained in Tom Green County Detention Center with no bond on the assault charge as of noon Tuesday, according to online jail records. Jezharne Anik Greenwood, 20, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. She remained in Tom Green County Detention Center with no bond listed as of noon Tuesday, according to online jail records. Danny Philip Hicks, Jr., 21, from El Dorado, was arrested on suspicion of misdemeanor possession of marijuana. He was released from Tom Green County Detention Center on a $1,000 bond, according to online jail records. Cameron Christopher Lewis, 25, was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center with no bond listed as of noon Tuesday, according to online jail records. The investigation is ongoing, according to the release. San Angelo police investigating shooting on Lakeside Avenue, victim in stable condition, by Rosanna Frere, published February 9th. Police are investigating a shooting on Lakeside Avenue that occurred Monday night, according to a news release. Just before 9 p.m., Monday, February 8th, officers were dispatched to the 2600 block of Lakeside Avenue for the report of a shooting victim. Officers located a 69-year-old man lying in the roadway suffering from an apparent gunshot wound, the release stated. The man was transported to a nearby hospital for treatment and is reported to be in stable condition. The preliminary investigation revealed that the victim was shot by an unidentified man who had been standing by a nearby vehicle. Further investigation revealed that just prior to the shooting, the victim approached the suspect unprovoked and confronted the suspect at knife point. If you have any information about this incident, contact the Criminal Investigations Division at 325-657-4264. To remain anonymous, text TIPSAPD to 888-777 and follow the prompts. This is an active investigation and no additional information is available for release. Could this former San Angelo Elementary become a water bottling plant? Here's What We Know by John Tufts, published February 8th. A vacant San Angelo Elementary School in the College Hills area could see new life as a water bottling facility, according to the building's property owner and officials familiar with the project. Last week, the City of San Angelo Planning Division issued a notice to homeowners living within 200 feet of the William B. Travis Elementary School building, 2909 A&M Avenue, regarding a zoning request change. The request is seeking to allow an additional use of a water processing and delivery business and related accessory uses at the former elementary campus, which was sold by San Angelo ISD Board Trustees in 2007. Amending the current zone from neighborhood to commercial will require the vote of approval from City Council, but members of the Planning Commission want to hear from residents first. Property owner Jack Gabriel hopes residents will give the plant a chance in creating new jobs from a building that's been left vacant for years. He said the proposed facility wouldn't be a noise nuisance. The plant would operate from 8 or 9 in the morning until 5 in the evening. Other than that, it would be nice and quiet, he said during an exclusive interview. Rather than using the entire school, Gabriel said the bottling plant would be limited to the gymnasium portion of the building because the sound dampening material inside would help eliminate noise from the machinery. We plan to run city water through a filtration system. It's a very clean, very quiet process, Gabriel said. Matter of fact, all the equipment running at the same time is about the sound of a diesel pickup while it's idling. Gabriel said the new bottling company, which has yet to be named, would likely hire 5 to 6 full-time employees from San Angelo who would distribute 5-gallon water bottles to local businesses, then collect and recycle the empty containers. Equipment for the facility would be provided by a man Gabriel says owns a similar facility in Odessa and who wants to expand his business into San Angelo. How do I make my voice heard? The notice, dated February 2nd, recommends residents who wish to share their opinions about the proposed water facility plant may do so at the next meeting of the Planning Commission, which is scheduled for February 15th. Due to COVID-19, the meeting is tentatively scheduled to be hosted online. Those who wish to make a public comment or speak at the meeting must send a request by noon February 14th to this email address: planning@COSATX.US. Officials with the city said the subject of the email must be in the following format: public comment, the item number, February 15th, 2021. All emails must include your name and address or SMD. Call 325-657 4210 for staff assistance. The Planning Commission will forward its recommendations to City Council, which will conduct a public hearing about the water bottling facility in March. Much of Travis Elementary left mostly vacant for years. Trustees of the San Angelo Independent School District finalized a contract to sell Travis Elementary School in August 2007 for $216,000 to Gilco Investments of Amarillo. The firm later sought zoning permits to construct an assisted living facility on the site near the intersection of A&M and Oxford Avenues, but the plan never materialized. Since then, the building has been left mostly vacant. In 2017, Travis Elementary was used to film scenes for the movie Sub Rosa, which has yet to be released. The gymnasium at Travis Elementary was used by Texas Tumbleweeds Gymnastics, who have since moved to a new facility in the Santa Rita neighborhood. Affidavit states, San Angelo man reached 130 miles per hour in race with children in car. By Elena Edgen, published February 8th. A San Angelo man has been arrested weeks after state troopers stopped two racing cars, which led to a positive COVID-19 test, according to an arrest affidavit released Monday. At 11:01 p.m., January 21st, a Texas Department of Public Safety trooper noticed two Dodge Challengers racing at speeds that reached 130 miles per hour on Loop 306 over Arden Road. The trooper conducted a traffic stop on both vehicles, records state. In one vehicle, a yellow Dodge Challenger, the trooper found two children, a 14-year-old boy and a 12-year-old girl, according to the affidavit. The driver, 18, was transported to Shannon Medical Center for COVID-19 screening. He tested positive and was released to his father, records state. About 15 days later, on Saturday, February 5th, police arrested the driver in the case. Angel Barrientos, 18, was arrested on suspicion of endangering a child, criminal negligence, and racing on a highway. He was released the following day on an $11,000 bond, according to online jail records. The other driver, who was not named in the affidavit, was arrested on a misdemeanor charge of racing on a highway. SAPD says San Angelo man uses vehicle to hit woman's car, leaves with their one-year-old child. By Elena Edgen, published February 8th. Clarification. This article was updated with more details about the incident. A San Angelo man has been arrested and released after a woman reported an assault by vehicle, according to an arrest affidavit released Monday. On Friday, February 5th, police responded to the 500 block of South Monroe Street for a domestic assault in progress. An officer noted significant damage to the front bumper of a woman's 2015 Nissan, records state. The woman told officers she had gotten into an argument with the man and parked her car in front of his under their carport. She stated the man was trying to leave with their one-year-old child, who was in the back seat of his 2021 Nissan Titan, according to the affidavit. She remained inside her vehicle and refused to move it. The man then began to strike her vehicle multiple times, causing damage and pushing her vehicle down the driveway. The man left with the child, but returned with the child soon after, records state. Jacob Alexander Rangel, 25, was arrested Saturday on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He was released the following day on a $75,000 bond, according to online jail records. Affidavit states Carlsbad man choked two women, shoved one into a wall. By Elena Edgen, published February 8th. A Carlsbad man has been arrested after two women reported assaults, one of which left red marks on her neck, according to an arrest affidavit released Monday. On Saturday, February 6th, Tom Green County Sheriff's deputies responded to the 13,000 block of 15th Street in Carlsbad to a reported assault. A woman stated the man assaulted her and impeded her breathing by placing his hands on her throat and applying pressure, records state. A second woman told investigators the man assaulted her by shoving her into the walls of the residence. The assault continued to the floor where he began choking her, according to the second woman's statement in the affidavit. Jason Franklin Hyde, 40, was arrested Saturday on suspicion of assaulting a family member by impeding breath or circulation on the first woman. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $25,000 bond as of Monday, according to online jail records. Elks Lodge to host stand-down event for homeless veterans in San Angelo, by Rosanna Frere, published February 8th. The Elks Lodge is hosting a stand-down event for homeless veterans in San Angelo on Friday. The veterans stand-down is from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Friday, February 12th at MHMR of the Concho Valley, 1501 West Beauregard Avenue. This event is for veterans in the San Angelo and surrounding areas who are experiencing need for housing services and other local resource information, a news release stated. Cold weather items will be available to the veterans. Bring DD-214 military ID card or VA ID card. If you don't have one of those, come to the event and you can get help obtaining them. The event is put on by West Texas VA Healthcare System in cooperation with the Military Veteran Peer Network, San Angelo Elks Lodge, and over 20 area service organizations. Any organization wishing to participate in the event should contact Laura Ozuna at 432-213-5796. Affidavit states, San Angelo man shook child causing subdural hematoma, by Elena Edgen, published February 8th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a child was rushed to Cook Children's Medical Center with internal bleeding, according to an arrest affidavit released Monday. On February 2nd, police received an intake report from Child Protective Services. The report stated a man had dropped a child who sustained a subdural hematoma. The internal bleeding injury required immediate specialized pediatric medical treatment at Cook Children's Medical Center, records state. The child's age was not provided in court documents, and their condition wasn't immediately known. The family had no prior history with CPS. The child's sibling, too, has been placed with relatives, according to Paul Zimmerman, media specialist for the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. Investigation revealed the man picked up the child under their arms and shook for 2 to 3 seconds. The man told investigators he shook the child hard enough that the child was bleeding in their head, record state. The man told police the child became dizzy, and after he shook the child, they stopped moving as much and their crying slowed, according to the arrest affidavit. Jarrett Raymond Mays, 24, was arrested Friday, February 5th on suspicion of injury to a child with intentional serious bodily injury. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $100,000 bond as of 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, according to online jail records. How you can help rebuild the Mason County Courthouse destroyed in a fire, by Elena Edgen, published February 5th. For over a century, the Mason County Courthouse stood as a landmark in the center of town. The tower, with its 150-year-old clock, ticked the hours away. Late Thursday night, the clock stopped. A blaze ripped through the historical building as distraught residents watched first responders battle the fire. By 1 a.m., the fire was under control, according to the HillCountyPassport.com. Whitney LeFest, Mason mayor, received the call late that night. As soon as she heard, she threw clothes on and rushed to the courthouse, which is a block from her home, she said. It was fully engulfed, she said. It's pretty much stone and rock walls that remain from the visual perspective this morning. Curtis Donaldson, vice president of lending and business development for the commercial bank in Mason, heard the news around 4 a.m. He woke up to 17 missed calls and saw the damage on Facebook before rushing into town. The courthouse is the centerpiece, the heartbeat, and the main attraction, Donaldson said. There's been a lot going on in our nation, state, and communities, and this just felt like another blow. Though mourning for the courthouse, the community is already banding together to recover the town square's jewel. The Commercial Bank of Mason has set up a fundraising account named Mason County Rebuild Our Courthouse. "We had decided early this morning to do it," Donaldson said. "We're a tight community and we'll gather together. We're going to rise from the ashes and get this rebuilt." How to help? People can donate in person, by check, or call the bank at 325-347-6324 for other options. Checks should be made to Mason County Rebuild Our Courthouse and mailed to P.O. Box 40, Mason, Texas, 76856. "This is a community that rallies together, and we will come out stronger on the other end," Lifesti said. The courthouse was beginning renovations, so records were removed before the fire. This is the third time the Mason County Courthouse has burned. Past fires were in 1877 and 1900, which prompted the creation of the community's fire department, according to FredericksburgStandard.com. The Texas State Fire Marshal is helping investigate the fire, according to a Facebook post by the department. The State Fire Marshal's office was requested to assist with determining the origin and cause of the fire, said Ben Gonzalez, media relations for the department. "It'll be some time before that information is available in a public report." On Friday evening, the Texas Historical Commission issued a news release mourning the loss of the courthouse. "Our commission and staff are in shock today as we discover the terrible damage caused to the landmark Mason County Courthouse in last night's fire," the news release stated. "We offer our sincerest condolences to Judge Jerry Bearden and his constituents across Mason County." The commission called the courthouse the heart of the community, a focus for celebrations, and a symbol of democracy. It also noted the terrible irony that Mason County has experienced this tragedy because the county and commission, for more than a decade, has worked toward preserving the building. The commission recently awarded a grant of more than $4 million to the county for the building's full restoration, and the dreams of many Mason County residents to see the courthouse return to its original glory were about to come true. "We are gratified to hear of the judge's commitment to rebuild," the release stated. Mason County Courthouse and the Texas Historical Commission. Mason County received a $4.1 million matching grant to do a full restoration from the THC's Texas Historic Courthouse Preservation Program. These funds would fall far short of what the county will need now to rebuild the courthouse. "The grant program's funding arrangement allows us to renegotiate scope at any time. Our leadership will work with the county to determine what can be done." Mason County also received a 2010 planning grant for $350,000, which was used to create a courthouse master plan for its full restoration. Investigation and car chase leads to man's arrest. Once the fire was out, the firefighters discovered several vehicles had been broken into and items were stolen, according to a county news release. Officials are also investigating a fire at a nearby residence they believe is linked to the courthouse blaze. While investigating the vehicle burglaries, additional information was developed implicating a potential suspect, the release stated. The suspect was apprehended near Waco. Nicholas Jarrett Miller, 41, was arrested in McClellan County after a vehicle chase. He is facing charges of theft of a vehicle, theft of a firearm, unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, breaking and entering, and evading arrest, according to Mason County Judge Jerry Bearden and jail records. Arson charges are expected to be added to the list as the investigation continues, Bearden said Saturday morning. "The state fire marshals are very thorough. We suspect an accelerant was used," Bearden said. Ryan Howard, DPS Public Information Sergeant in Waco, stated a vehicle chase with a suspect began in Georgetown. Georgetown police attempted a traffic stop on a Ford pickup in Williamson County. The pickup sped off, crossing into Bell and McClellan County. Multiple agencies used spike strips on the vehicle. About 10:40 a.m., state troopers took over the chase around mile marker 270, Howard said. The driver, a man, stopped and surrendered on the 328 northbound, less than 10 miles south from Waco, Howard said. As of 6:15 p.m., the driver's identity has not been confirmed. This incident is under investigation by the Mason County Sheriff's Office, State Fire Marshal's Office, and is being assisted by the Texas Rangers, according to a county release. San Angelo Nursing School student starts business selling charcuterie boxes and boards, by Rosanna Frere, published February 8th. A Howard College nursing school student has started a business selling charcuterie boxes, boards, and tables. You might have noticed a trend on social media of cheese and meat boards. They are called charcuterie boards, or as Brady Knight calls them, adult Lunchables. Charcuterie is the culinary art of preparing meat products with other snacks like cheese, olives, figs, crackers, fresh fruit, mixed nuts, chocolate, and much more. The thing about charcuterie, there are no rules. Any snack, savory or sweet, can be put on a board. Knight is now a charcuterer, person who creates charcuterie, since she began her business, Coterie Charcuterie, on January 2nd. Coterie is a small group of people with shared interests or tastes, especially that is exclusive of other people, according to an Instagram post from Knight. Knight offers delivery or pickup of her charcuterie boxes in San Angelo, which come in many flavors and sizes. Since starting over a month ago, Knight has completed nearly 40 orders. "I was afraid the business wouldn't take off, but lo and behold, it has," she said. "I was shocked at how quickly it took off." Before COVID-19 hit, Knight was living in Fort Worth, where charcuterie was popular, and thought she would bring it to San Angelo. The 26-year-old is working full-time as a hairstylist and attending school full-time at Howard College as a nursing student. "I was going to school, but 18-year-old me thought it was cool to be a free spirit," Knight said. "So now I'm getting back into school." For the moment, Knight is only operating her business on Instagram. "I overfill my plate a little more than I should, so I want to make sure and get my scheduling down," she said. "Once I put it on Facebook, it might be the same thing and get big, so I might get a little overwhelmed." Here are the boxes and prices available at Coterie Charcuterie. Mini Char Box, Personal Box, Feeds 1, $20. Small Char Box, Feeds 2 to 4, $40. Medium Char Box, Feeds 6 to 8, $55. Large Char Box, Feeds 8 to 10, $65. All boxes can be ordered as gluten-free upon request. Keto Char Box are also available in all sizes with the same prices as the original boxes. For more information or to order a box, send a message to Coterie Charcuterie on Instagram. Husband and wife turn quarantine candle-making hobby into a business in San Angelo, by Rosanna Frere, published February 5th. A husband and wife have turned their quarantine candle-making hobby into a business in San Angelo. James Herrera suggested to his wife Amy that they should make their own candles instead of buying them. In May 2020, James learned how to make candles and car freshies. 9 months later, the Herreras have purchased a storefront for J&A Candles. With everything that's happened last year, everyone had their little side hustle going on, and some people have turned it into a full-time job, Amy said. The couple makes hand-poured candles, waxes, and custom car freshies out of their home. However, J&A Candles has become too big for their kitchen. They purchased a building at 2034 West Harris Avenue and plan to open by the end of February. Until then, the business will be run out of their home at 2405 Greenwood Street. The couple said the reason they were able to grow is because of their customers. The customer base we have had from our community is awesome, Amy said. We have people that have been with us since James made his first batch of candles. Amy took time to answer questions about their business. What are your hopes for the future? We are hoping to be able to open more than one location. That would be our goal. We need to see how the store here is going to go first, but that is our big goal, to open multiple stores. How did you get started in the business? James found a car freshie one day, and he's all about his truck smelling good, so he thought he could try it himself. He looked everything up and how to make them during quarantine. He went to Hobby Lobby, got a starter kit for candles, and just researched until he got it right. Then everything else came into place, and we kept adding things. What should make your business stand out? We make our candles really strong. You can light them for 15 minutes, and the scent can go all throughout your house. They are good quality. We also do everything custom. Other people make candles and car freshies, and we support them 100%. We don't think we are better than anyone else, but what sets us apart is that James learned how to make stencils for the car freshies by hand. People just buy cookie cutters at stores, but we can make really anything. What's the biggest challenge in running your business? Here at home, our challenge has been finding the space to be able to do everything. Also, just the unknown. It's scary putting everything into a business. Right now, our biggest challenge is just going to the next step. What motivates you to go to work every morning? We are in it. There's no going back now. We have come this far. I was a food server, so that has always been my comfort zone. But I'm not getting any younger. We want to do something different and work for ourselves. For more information, email jacandles20@gmail.com or on their Facebook page at facebook.com/jacandles20. SAPD says San Angelo gun store owners foil man's attempt to steal rifle hidden in coveralls. By Elena Edgen, published February 4th. A San Angelo gun shop owner and his wife stopped an attempted theft and held the person until police arrived, according to an arrest affidavit released Thursday. On Tuesday, February 2nd, police responded to a gun theft at Texas Gun Shop, 1018 West Beauregard Avenue. The store owner's wife told officers she saw a man in brown coveralls in the store. The man grabbed a brown Ruger Gunsight Scout 450 Bushmaster rifle, unzipped his coveralls, and put it down his pants leg, record state. She alerted the store owner, who approached the man and asked him to unzip his coveralls. The owner recovered the weapon and detained the man until police arrived, according to the arrest affidavit. Store video surveillance showed the man take the rifle, hide it in his clothes, and try to leave when the store owner approached him, record state. David Andrew Hampton, 42, was arrested Tuesday on suspicion of theft of a firearm. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $10,000 bond as of 2:30 p.m. to Thursday, according to online jail records. And now, finally, here is the weekly column from the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Office in Tom Green County. Now is a good time to clean up your yard, by Allison Watkins. There will still be some wintry cold days before spring arrives for good, but the warm, pleasant weather we've been having is a sign to start getting ready for the warm season. February is a great time of year to focus on cleaning up the yard to get ready for spring green up and make plans for late landscape additions or changes. Perennials that died to the ground should be cut back fully to allow new spring growth to emerge. Perennials that are semi-evergreen benefit from shearing back about halfway or down to where there is plenty of green healthy tissue. Even many evergreen perennials that are not harmed by winter freezes can look more attractive and grow more vigorously with a healthy late winter shearing. For example, spreading and mounding plants like Artemisia and Santalina tend to spread out away from their planting point, leaving a bare, unsightly section in the center. Cutting them back significantly this time of year helps the plants stay more compact, dense, and beautiful. Ground covers can also benefit from a winter trimming. It will help them stay neat and tidy. Asian jasmine is a popular and common ground cover for good reason. It's a nice size and texture, is fairly easy to grow, can handle shade, and doesn't need tons of water. A severe trim, as low as 6 inches, can help it grow back denser and thicker in the spring, but it will cause it to look ugly for a while. A hedge trimmer is best, and a string trimmer can work, but is more uneven and can accidentally dig up runners. Mondo grass can be mowed once a year with a mower at the highest setting, no lower than 4 inches, to keep it looking dense and healthy. It will also look rough until spring growth fills it back in. For those that would like to add new flower beds or garden plots or expand existing ones, now is a good time to work on soil prep. Till up the area to be planted and incorporate compost. Take advantage of the cooler weather to complete the more labor-intensive steps. Apply a thick 3 to 4 inch deep layer of mulch to help prevent weeds from popping up. The mulch can be moved out of the way where needed for spring planting later. For well-established existing lawns, pre-emergent can be applied now through about March 1st to prevent spring weeds. Just don't apply pre-emergent anywhere seeds will be planted within the next 3 to 6 months, depending on the product and how long it lasts. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.